Hello, everybody. My name is Nahum Siegel, and welcome to Buy the Book. Buy the Book brought to you by Koren Publishers, KORENPUB.com, to check out what Koren has to offer. And boy, do they have a lot to offer. They are amazing, and we'll tell you more about their publications coming up. This week, we have the opportunity to speak to Rabbi Dr. Binyamin Lau. Rabbi Dr. Binyamin Lau is an Israeli community leader, educator, and social activist. He is the rabbi of the Ramban Synagogue in Yerushalayim, founder of the Moshe Green Beit Midrash for Women's Leadership at Beit Morasha's Beren College, and a research fellow at the Israel Democracy Institute. Rabbi Lau also serves as a consultant for a number of leading organizations and is frequently cited in the media. He studied at Yeshivat Har Etzion and Yeshivat Kibbutz Hadati and received a Ph.D. in Talmud from Bar Ilan University. With the events of this week, I will remind our listeners that Rabbi Lau has written a book about and knows a tremendous amount about the life of Harav Avadya Yosef of blessed memory. Rabbi Binyamin Lau, welcome to the Nahum Siegel Network.
Hello, thank you for having me with you and with all the people who listen to us. I will start with, if you allow me to say one word, that this week we lost one of our leaders in the Jewish world. And my PhD is about his philosophy, Rav Avadya Yosef. And I feel privately, individually, that the people know a lot about Rav Avadya in the aspect of the politician, about the in the parliament, in the Shas party. They know a few facts about the real life of Rav Avadya, who used to be the one who keeps the Torah from the, I can say, from the past, the Eastern world, and move it to the future. But our subject is differently, so I just mentioned that because my heart this week is inside this subject. So you forgive me.
Well, Rabbi Dr. Lau, not only do we forgive you, but I'd like to explore that more in a moment. Rabbi Binyamin Lau is with us because he has a couple of publications, very important works that are out, Volume 3 of his series entitled The Sages. We will speak about that, and of course his work on Jeremiah, The Fate of a Prophet. And that was the reason that Rabbi Lau and I were originally connected, was to discuss these two important works, and we will. But Rabbi Lau, I must follow up, if you don't mind. I have this insatiable curiosity, especially about Jewish leadership. So let me just ask you, based on what you just said, how did you discover that there was a philosophy about a philosophy of Harav Avadya Yosef? And what I mean is, you've analyzed the lives of so many greats in Jewish history, and many of them, of course, have their own philosophy, have their own derech, have something unique that they bring to the table, so to speak. At some point, it must have become obvious to you that Harav Avadya Yosef had a unique perspective, or as you just said, a philosophy. At what point was it that you discovered that?
You can ask every student who prepares himself to be a rabbi how he uses very often the response of Rav Avadya Yosef in all subjects. Rav Avadya Yosef wrote in his books about everything, but to write about everything, it's nothing. The idea of leading the responsa and take you to the point that you find the solution in the end with brilliant minds and use the sources from the history around the world, use it correctly, know when and how to take the right responsa from the whole generation before him. It's like an architect. He did it in a life story, more than 80 years of working. And when I prepared myself to be a rabbi, I found myself read more and more responsa for Rav Avadya Yosef. And in the end, after a few years, I understood that my heart taking me deeply to understand the person, but not the politician, not the one who deal in the social life, but the one who writes the whole book. And I found myself 15 years ago inside his room. He let me come to his private room and to learn from him how he works and how we do how he writes all his responses, and I become very close to that. In the end, I found myself 13 years ago bring my work to Bar Ilan University and get the PhD. It's a big privilege, and the book that I wrote after that called Maran Ad Maran link the idea that Rav Yosef Karo from the 16th century was the Shulchan Aruch, as well known. He's the one that Rav Ovadia Yosef linked himself in the 20th and 21st century, and he, in my eyes, Rav Ovadia Yosef is the continue of Rav Yosef Karo in our world. I mean, unique leader that we can see in the Jewish history once of many hundred years. And the privilege that he wrote a letter for me about my book in Hebrew, Maran Ad Maran, it's a big privilege, and I'm very honored and blessed about that.
I can only imagine. Someone commented to me when he passed away yesterday, someone mentioned to me that and you've alluded to this, and I want to be very careful how I ask you this, that his political life affected his legacy. And I don't think that necessarily is said in a negative way, but it definitely changed things a bit in terms of how people viewed Hara Vadi Yosef as compared to exclusively being a scholar, a Talmid Chacham, a rabbi, etc. When you think of the recent years where he was so involved in the Israeli political spectrum, does it either enhance or take away or just bring a different perspective to the great Talmud Chacham that he was?
It's true. It's true that people listen and watch to the present acts who working around them. I mean, the political acts are very fresh in the mind, and it's new, the Torah that he took and leads. It's take it to the corner and it cover it. But it's just in the present time. As you know, the whole political life is not a very short life. And in very soon, people will forget everything about the party, about the political aspects. And the Torah that he wrote will be in the shelf for so many years. So if you look, you know, further the present time, if you look to the future, you can be sure that Rav Ovadia will be in the memories of the Jewish people just by his Torah and nothing about the political aspects.
Understood. With everything that you've said about him, I guess it was no surprise that the largest funeral gathering in the history of Israel took place yesterday, meaning in terms of numbers, I'm sure it was not just members of the Sfarda community, but people of all walks of life in Israel came to the funeral.
It's all around, more than 500,000. It's unbelievable. I can tell you that to stand there with the whole, not just numbers, but colors, different people from all kind of sectors, means that people understood that this was one of the spiritual leaders that we had the privilege to have with us for so many years.
And finally, on the topic of Harav Avadia Yosef, if I may ask you, it's always a curiosity when someone leaves us, when was the last time you had an opportunity to speak with him at length? And was it a vital topic, or did you just have an opportunity to say hello to him recently?
It was a very, very simple situation when my sixth child had bar mitzvah half a year ago, so I went to get bracha with my son, and we had an excellent discussion with the big bracha that the child got, and that was actually the last meeting. In the last 10 or 13 years, I had many meetings with him. Most of them learning, most of them dealing with the questions that I brought, and I get the answers. And thanks God, I had the zchut, the privilege to be close to such a gadol that we had in our generation.
Rabbi Dr. Binyamin Lau is with us via telephone from Israel. His brand new books that are being introduced to our audience, The Sages, Volume 3, and Jeremiah, The Fate of a Prophet. I want to thank our friends at Koren Publications, korenpub.com, korenpub.com. Rabbi Lau, if I may, let's start with Yirmiyahu. Let's start with Jeremiah, The Fate of a Prophet. It was a difficult era, the era in which Yirmiyahu lived. Is it somewhat depressing writing about that era in Jewish history?
In your permission, I will start saying that the sages, the sedra that I wrote about the sages, and in Hebrew I'm working now to volume 5. In English you have already 3 volumes.
Right.
I wrote it from my academy background, from the yeshiva background, with my knowledge. But Jeremiah, I wrote from my heart. Hmm. And it's different. It's different book. For example, to write the books about the sages took me at least 2 years each volume. To write the book about Jeremiah took me 10 days. it's not. I'm saying that not to be a hero or something like that. The book was in my head already. And the problem or very hard situation about the book of Jeremiah is that something happened with the editor of the book. If you read the book from the Bible, from chapter 1 to chapter 52, you find yourself, never mind if it's the Hebrew version or the English version, you find yourself that you lost. You can't read the story. You see that chapter is not connected to the next one. Each one jumped to the other. And after many years trying to teach, learn and teach Jeremiah, I understood that what I need to do is to break the book to pieces. And then, like a puzzle, to build it again, but in different way. And then when I complete, build the puzzle, according to the chronologic system, immediately I saw the story. And when I saw the story, I closed myself for 10 days and just wrote it again. I didn't change a word from the original book. And the story raised up. And it's a dramatic story about the last 50 years of the Jewish people in the first temple days. And it's so hard because we understand when we read this book, that we had chance, we had option, and we missed it. So to read this book today, not my book, but Jeremiah book, with my help, it bring all of us. First of all, the Israelis who tried to build the state, and secondly, the Jewish people around. It brings us the idea of responsibility that we had chance in the past, 2,600 years ago, we had chance and we missed it. So now we are again in the situation of trying to build ourselves as a nation in our land, and hopefully, read Jeremiah can give us the key how to keep ourselves from the mistakes that we did in the past.
But Rabbi Lau, today, let's put it this way, if I describe the time of Jeremiah as somewhat depressing or somewhat, spiraling out of control and becoming, eventually a terrible end, today, many of us would look at life from within the Jewish world and say it's just the opposite, that we are experiencing some type of revitalization, that we are on the way to more and more positive and more good. Is that wrong to describe it that way?
If you learn Jeremiah carefully, so you see immediately that he had 3 parts of his career. The first part was in the day of the king Yoshiyahu, and the time of Yoshiyahu was time that the sky was blue on the heads, mean that he didn't see clouds. It was very optimistic situation. When Yoshiyahu led the people in Judea, the situation was that the Assyrians in north fight against the Babylon, and we in Judea were so strong, and we believed that the days of Solomon came back. It was a very, very, I should say, illusion time, but it was a strong time. Yoshiyahu built the society. Yoshiyahu moved the society further to north, to east, to south. The borders become very large. And Jeremiah, the first part of his life, moved to north and said to the people from Israel, said, return back. We can come to the same status that we used to have in the past in Solomon days, that we were like empire. And then in 609 BCE, 609, right, happened that Yoshiyahu killed by the Egyptians. And that was the end of this part. Why killed? I will send the people to read in the book. but that was the catastrophic situation that after that, Jeremiah start his depression part as a prophet. And but the first part for 20 years was very optimistic.
All right, so we've had a nice overview of part one of your book of Jeremiah. How realistic was reunification at that time? Was there a real chance before the death of Yoshiyahu?
The truth is that it's an excellent question, because the Yoshiyahu had chance to build the society, and it's a question of, you know, of reading the map, because you need to make a decision. I mean, Yoshiyahu, the king, need to make a decision. Where are you in the coalition between the empire? Do you put yourself in the side of the Egyptians with Assyrians against Babylon, or you decide to put yourself with the Babylon against Egypt and the Assyrians? And it's a question of risk. And Yoshiyahu did the wrong act, but we cannot judge him. We know, you know, we say in Hebrew, "Al tadun et chavercha ad shetagi lemikumo." You never, you're not allowed to judge your friend, and of course not your leader, if you are not in his shoes. Right. So Yoshiyahu did wrong step, and that was the end of his kingdom. And after that, we lost the independence. After Yoshiyahu, 22 years before the temple, before the destruction of the first temple, before 22 years, we lost the independence in Judea. So it's very difficult to say, you know, to judge the situation. But I can tell the clear that Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah, as a prophet, work hand by hand with the king, a very positive way, and we can say that he cried and he wrote the poems Kinot after Yoshiyahu died.
Right.
So it's very, very hard situation.
Rabbi Dr. Binyamin Lau with us via telephone from Israel. The name of the book, Jeremiah: The Fate of a Prophet, Koren Publishers. Then we move to the reign of Jehoiakim. Did Yirmiyahu's negative prophecies, or the ones that scare us so much, did they begin immediately during that period?
It's the first part of Jeremiah, the days of Jehoiakim, is the time that he found himself at the opposition to the kingdom. Jehoiakim actually wasn't independent. He was kind of vassal with the Egyptians, Paro, the king of Egypt, took him, Jehoiakim, and put him on the chair of in Judea. And because that, he, the king of Egypt, gave him the not just the protection, but gave him the security, and he paid a lot of taxes to Egypt. Jehoiakim built his kingdom without seeing the needs of the Jewish people. He built his palace, beautiful palace, and the people who worked there didn't get the salary. He didn't see the pools in the streets. He didn't see the needs of the people. He was terrible king. And Jeremiah stood strongly against him. And in the end, Jehoiakim tried to kill him. That was the first act that Jeremiah worked as a prophet. We should say a prophet like a journalist who wrote the column weekly or daily against the prime minister or against the king. And in the end, the king have no, you know, what you call the attention to hear more and more negative words against him. And he find what you say today wanted again against Jeremiah. That was 11 years. 11 years of the days of Jeremiah was with Jehoiakim. And in the end, he needs to run away from Jerusalem because Jehoiakim wants to kill him. To kill him too.
And this might be something that we could relate to today as well. But when trying to get into the mind of Yirmiyahu, when someone is giving these types of prophecies and predicting or reminding people of what could happen if things continue to go downward, is it still possible for that same person to remain positive and upbeat and with hope for the future?
I think that, first of all, it's a hard question. When I'm talking about a prophet, Jeremiah is a good example. He's not the only one. But I ask myself, if I'm trying to put to equal the image of prophet today, we have no prophet, thank God maybe. We have no prophet, but we have many journalists. We have many people who stand in a position and say to us, to the society, what they feel and what they see and what the expectation should be, and writing about values, about defects situation of leadership. And I think that somehow this is kind of prophets, that you have the vision to stand and look further from the present to the future, not by know what will happen, but you understand differently. When Yirmiyahu stood there in Judea in the days of Jehoiakim, he stood in the yard of the temple. Try to think. The temple, the routine life in the temple was regularly. People came with sacrifices and worked day after day. And he stood there in the yard and said a prophet with four words. The words from the Bible, I will say it in English, in Hebrew. Kishkilo yihyeh habayit hazeh. He said that this temple, meaning in Jerusalem, Beit HaMikdash, in the end will be exactly like what's happened in the first building that we had in the temporary place in Shiloh, meaning destruction.
Right.
And the people first time, try to think that, first time in the history of the temple, first time they heard that the place Yerushalayim, Beit HaMikdash, it can be destroyed. It's not forever. Someone took the insurance from the hands of the Jewish people, and he said, I promised you, if you will continue to behave like you do, I promised you this temple will be felled. And people start fighting against Jeremiah, because you're not allowed to say that. That was the first reaction. The Kohanim, the people around, except, you know, very few people who protect him. People fight against him. That was the second part of Jeremiah, until the days of the Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babel, came to Jerusalem, took the son of Jehoiakim, named Jehoniah, took him to Chutz La'aretz, to Babel, to Babylon. And it's unbelievable. Try to remember that we are still 11 years before the destruction.
Right.
So he took this king, Nebuchadnezzar, brilliant, brilliant in power king. He took the Jewish strong people with the king, Yechoniah, the king, and his mother. He took all of them, about 10,000 strong families, moved them, transferred them to the rivers of Babylon, between, as you know, the two rivers, Mesopotamia, and then he built a new state for the Jewish people, a new state not in Israel, not in Jerusalem. So we had, at the same time, under the leadership of the Babylon Empire, we had two states for one nation. We had the state of the Jewish people in Babylon, and we had the Jewish state in Jerusalem. So in Jerusalem, he put the king named Zedekiah, and in Babylon, he puts a king named Yechoniah, and the people in Babylon start learning how to live in diaspora. This is the first steps of what we call the Yahadut Agola, the people from Chutz La'aretz, the Jewish people, with communities, with the synagogues, with the society, with all the Gmilut Chassadim that you have in the Keilot. You should say, if we are talking in the States now, so we should say Al Ne'arot, on the rivers of the East River and the Hudson. Okay, so it started in 597.
Or even extended
BCE.
Even extended to the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, because there's plenty of Jewish community. Yeah. There are plenty of Jewish communities in between. The comparison is striking, of course, and I'm sure you're making this point specifically and on purpose.
Of course, you can't read. Believe me, you can't read the Book of Jeremiah without asking yourself, where am I in this picture? Everyone around the world, in Israel and diaspora, ask himself, I want to find myself, to point myself, where am I? And it's unbelievable. It's so relevant.
And that's why when Gedaliah was assassinated, essentially it went from 2 to 1, the one being in Chutz La'aretz.
You know that it's the situation. You jump over. I see that you have no time.
But no, I have time. I'm trying to make the point of just how much of a downgrade it ended up being.
You know that Gedaliah came to his position just after the destruction.
Right.
I mean, in the end, after the revolt against Babylon, after the army of Nebuchadnezzar came to Jerusalem, after they destroyed Jerusalem and the temple, just after that, after taking the whole Jewish people to Babylon like slaves, after that, the Babylon decided to take Gedaliah ben Achikam and put him on the chair of the leader, like the like ambassador of the Babylon people in Judea. Try to remember that Gedaliah came from a family who was very strong, positive to the Babylon. So what the Jewish people in Jerusalem thought about Gedaliah?
Right.
You understand
he was
kind of enemy.
Right.
So the murder was obvious.
Right. He was not one of the more beloved figures in Jewish history. So now, Rabbi Lau, with all of this, I must ask you a question. Are you more frustrated today with the Jews living in Israel, or are you more frustrated with members of the Jewish community who are outside of Israel today?
The reason that I talk with you is that I, even with my broken English, I feel that we need to share the feelings about the responsibility. This is the reason that I wrote the book. This is the reason that I'm talking about the book. I feel that it's relevant today more than any time else. I feel that we are now in a situation that the Jewish people are strong enough. We have, thanks God, we have our state, and we, both, you know, in America and in Israel, we share the future, we take care, and we do very, very, we should say, feel comfortable with all the problem, all question, all politician, we know that we are in a situation of strong about the Jewish people, but it's so dangerous. If you read carefully, you understand that you shouldn't sleep quietly. You need to wake yourself all the time to understand what is the moment that you can miss everything about values, about moral, about how states, an independent state, should take care to the minorities. This is the whole subject that Jeremiah talked about. He said to the Jewish people in Jerusalem, if you will not take care about the poor people, about the minorities in the Gentiles in your state, if you will not take care to the old people who have no chance except your help, so you will miss the opportunity to stand. And we now in the situation of taking care.
And that to him was the priority, correct?
Exactly.
So I'll ask my question again. Greater frustration with the situation in the state of Israel, because you've been described as a social activist who is at the forefront of many causes in the Holy Land, or are you even more disappointed in those of us who have chosen to not yet move to the Holy Land?
It's not a fair question, but I will answer. I think that if you heard carefully before, I said don't judge
right.
your friend if you're not in his shoes.
Right.
I had the privilege, and I want you to listen in really insensitive way.
Uh-huh.
I had the privilege to born in Israel.
Right.
My father is a survivor from the Holocaust.
Right.
He took himself by 10 fingers alone, took himself with his brother and moved to Eretz Israel alone, after the Shoah, after the flood, after everything. And my mother took herself alone from West Europe to Eretz Israel. And I was born here. I didn't do any decision. I was born here. And I know if you're born in Chutz La'aretz, in a very strong community, and your roots deep there, around you see the culture, the family, the language, everything, and then someone come to you and say, according to the sedra that we read in week parasha, we said, Lech Lecha, Avraham Avinu, move yourself to the promised land. It's easy to say for me as Israeli. I know that we need to be here in Israel. It's clear for me. I know that to live in Chutz La'aretz, it's like Hashem punished us to live there, and we take it as a present. It's a mistake. I know that. But I will never judge a person who born there and connect strongly there to say why you don't move. I pray that people in Chutz La'aretz will find the koach, the power to cut the roots and to bring themselves with kids, with all family, to be part of the future of Am Yisrael.
Dr. Lau, well said, to say the least. We'll give you a minute to rest because I'm going to remind our listeners what we're doing. Koren Publishers brings you an amazing hour each and every week entitled By the Book. And our guest this week, or by Dr. Binyamin Lau, if you missed any of the early part of our conversation, he is a renowned expert on the life and of the giant of Rav Vadi Yosef. We had an opportunity to speak about Rav Vadi Yosef of blessed memory, who, of course, was taken from us this week. And the first book that we were able to analyze a little bit and discuss is called Jeremiah, The Fate of a Prophet. It's part of the Maggid Studies in Tanakh series, and we're going to get to Rabbi Lau's work on the sages in just a moment. Do you find the stories in Tanakh confusing or complicated? Do you want to know where the biblical sites are located in modern-day Israel? Maggid Books is proud to announce the Maggid Studies in Tanakh. The Maggid Studies in Tanakh offers fascinating explorations of the Bible that bring you into the world of the prophets. Ask your local Jewish bookseller or go to korenpub.com, korenpub.com, korenpub.com. Maggid Books, a division of Koren Publishers of Jerusalem. Rabbi Dr. Binyamin Lau is an Israeli community leader, educator, and social activist, rabbi of the Ramban Synagogue in Yerushalayim, founder of the Moshe Green Beit Midrash for Women's Leadership at Beit Morashah's Beren College, research fellow at the Israel Democracy Institute. He also serves as consultant for a number of leading organizations and frequently is cited in the media. Studied at Yeshivat Har Etzion and Yeshivat Kibbutz Adati and received a PhD in Talmud from Bar Ilan University. I want to spend some time on the sages. Rabbi Lau has completed the third volume of the sages, Character, Context, and Creativity. You may have heard earlier in this conversation how he already alluded to a fifth volume in the series. Rabbi Lau, if you would, could you tell us what started you on the road to write about the sages?
Very simple situation. I'm a rabbi in a Ramban congregation in Katamon in Jerusalem, and I had the privilege to give a Shabbat afternoon shiur. And you know the tradition, old tradition, that we learn Pirkei Avot in the Shabbat afternoon in the summer.
Right.
Very, very old Ashkenazi tradition.
Right.
And I started 12 years ago, I think, the regular shiur, but I tried to bring to the shiur not just the Mishnah, not just the source, but because my background in Jewish history, in Talmud studies, in the university, so I tried to take the overview of the background of the sages, the situation of the history, what happened in the real time of the sages, and then I found myself in the first chapter, Pirkei Avot, in a question that I never thought about. For example, everyone knows that in Hanukkah we celebrate the Maccabean days.
Right.
Now, ask your people who hear our discussion now. Ask yourself, where in the Mishnah you find the story about the Maccabean? You know what? Not the story about the Maccabean. The story about Hanukkah. You read the first chapter of Pirkei Avot, and you read the names of sages in Pirkei Avot. For example, Yossi ben Yoezer, Yossi ben Yochanan, names like that.
Right.
And you look carefully to understand when they work, what was the period that they wrote the beautiful words that we have from them. And then you realize that they wrote it during the days of the Maccabim. And then you start ask questions. Why it's not written? Why the gap between the background and the message happened in the Mishnah? And then I start dealing with the learning the Torah, I mean Torah she'be'al peh, the Torah of the Mishnah days and before and after, and reading it with all the aspects around the who was the leaders, who were the people who ran the society, you know, who was in the coalition and the opposition, what newspapers we had in that time, who were the enemies around. Just learn, read the Mishnah like a newspaper,
uh-huh,
and understand the message that they wrote, that it's written then to our time. But if you understand the time that they wrote it, you understand much better the message that they try to share with you. So I start 12 years ago with that, and it's continued year after year, every summer, and I found myself in the end with Assyria. So thanks God, now I am almost finished the fifth volume, and I am almost in the second generation of the sages in the Talmud days, mean the third century. So if I started in the Second Temple days in Pirkei Avot, the first volume of sages is the Second Temple days. Second volume is the days after Second Temple days, after the destruction, until Bar Kokhba rebuilt, mean about 70 years, include the whole days of Rabbi Akiva days, unbelievably dramatic period. Then third volume, dealing with the days after what we call the Holocaust of the old days. If you remember, that the leader of the Romans, the Adrianus, killed third of the Jewish people.
Right.
Third of the Jewish people. We sometimes we forget that. So after that, we, the Jewish people, moved from Judea, moved to the Galil and Chutz Laaretz, to Babylon. And then the third volume dealing with the Jewish society after the Holocaust in the second century. The fourth volume dealing with the beginning of the Talmud days, the Talmud in Eretz Israel and in Babylon. And now the fifth volume dealing with the third century, about the days that Yeshivot Bavel started and created. So thanks God we have a long way.
How much of the second volume is dedicated to Rabbi Akiva? Because who was more of a fascinating personality than him?
Not less than third of the book.
Wow.
Is about Rabbi Akiva. And I must tell you that the fantastic thing that happened to this volume is that we have in Israel one of the fantastic writers named Brandes, Yochi Brandes.
Uh-huh.
Yochi Brandes wrote, books that she wrote from her head. It's a dramatic books. It's books about everything except it's not a study books. It's reading books. And she wrote book last year. It called about Rabbi Akiva, and she wrote in the first page that all her book came from Sages Volume 2. Means that it's become a very popular book to learn about the background. You should remember that many, many Israelis who know perfect Hebrew but have no ability to open the Talmud,
right,
have no ability to open Mishnah, have no ability to read the Hebrew letters from the Kodesh books. And thanks God, I really, really, I feel blessed that very many secular, intelligent people read my books and take them to their own needs around the country. And now, hopefully, in the English version, we will have a connection, and we can share thoughts and feelings about our backgrounds.
I think Rabbi Akiva is a good example. In general, we know that certain accomplishments fit well with certain personalities. I think that certain piskei halacha depends on the background of the person who is, in fact, being the decisor of the question. In a joking fashion, I sometimes, when I hear about a mother who doesn't tolerate when the boys play ball in the house, I ask, did she grow up with brothers or not? You know, circumstance has a lot to do with the way people are. Asking, and there's so many you've written about, obviously, and we're recommending that everybody buy all the volumes because it's such an amazing work, The Sages. But take Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Was there something unique about him and his personality or his creativity or his character that would say to you, this is why he went ahead and saved Torah Shebaal Peh, because of this unique quality of his?
Okay, you know that the answer is go and read, because about quarter of the third volume is dealing with Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi.
Right.
And why he had the great zchut to be Rebbe, to be the leader that, gave us the Mishnah. It's unbelievable. I believe that, promised you, if you read this part of the book in Sages 3, you will see the whole picture about Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, his background, his power, and the answer will be so simple when you complete that. I must tell you that everyone take it for a different answer, but I try to give the whole picture. It's not the T answer, it's not secular academy answer, it's includes. It's taking the whole aspects. And thanks God, I know that the Hebrew version work very well, and many, many people understand that We should say Torat Emet. You feel that it's correct. And I hope that the English version will do the same job.
So let me ask you this. When it comes to actions, I mentioned Piske Halacha. I think those are, you know, again, something very much associated with background nurture as opposed to nature and things like that. What about philosophy? When we read a specific sentence, a specific directive, a specific suggestion by somebody in Pirkei Avot, for instance, is it unique to their personality? Can one say, yes, they felt that way and had this philosophy of life because of a specific background that they had or because of the way, you know, they approach things?
I think that we should be very careful. The answer is yes, but we should be very careful because, you know, when you take one sentence of one of the sages, the key is how you what is your interpretation? Because we have 70, as you know, in Hebrew language, shivim panim. We have 70 faces to every sentence, and we take sentences from sages and take them to different ways. For example, if Rabbi Akiva said in chapter 3 in Pirkei Avot, Chaviv Adam Shenivra Betzelem, means that we like the person, the human being, because Hashem created him with image of God. So the simple way to explain is that every human being created the image of God. Then you will find later some of the parshanim, the people who give the interpretations, that wrote that Chaviv Adam, it's not the whole people, but just the Jewish people. It's unbelievable. But they did it strongly. And if you will find it in the Gemara, mean that the old days took Rabbi Akiva position and moved him to a very, very, I should say, particular explanation. And this, of course, I can take it to a very different way. So we should be very careful. I believe that the answer for your question is definite yes. There is a philosophy inside the sages' words and sentences and Torah, but the way how we understand that is huge difference.
And in particular, I guess it's always recommended to try to cull together as many statements as possible attributed to each sage so that you could study as big a sample as possible.
There is some of the sages that I can say I follow his steps and I can share with you for a long way. And for example, you know, in United States, you know quite well Rabbi Heschel, right? Heschel was one of the leaders of the Jewish society last generation, and if I'm not mistaken, the Orthodox people didn't feel comfortable with him.
Correct.
But when you learn carefully Heschel, you will see that he followed by himself. He followed the steps of Rabbi Ishmael instead taking the steps of Rabbi Akiva. He understood that the argument between Rabbi Akiva and his colleague, Rabbi Ishmael, should be very sensitive about style of life. If you want to be part of the simple way of living in the present time, or if you want to be a person who dream about the future, he understood that Rabbi Akiva, he is not just a person with dreams and fantasy and the view of the future. He felt that Rabbi Akiva took the society far away from the what we call normal life, and he decided to move back to Rabbi Ishmael. And it's unbelievable situation to read again the dilemma between Rabbi Ishmael and Rabbi Akiva, and again to ask yourself, where are you? In what camp you feel comfortable? I can promise to you that the whole people who listen to us now and identify themselves as the modern people, liberal people, even in the Orthodox world, will feel much more comfortable in Rabbi Ishmael sector more than in Rabbi Akiva's sector.
Right.
But for that, you need to read the second volume. So run and read.
I know that there are many scholars that have been completely enveloped in the life of Rabbi Akiva. I mean, this is me saying this, I'm no expert in it, but I know that his broad thinking and different things that he brought to the table is so different from other giants of that time. So
try to think that in Bnei Brak, in the ultra-Orthodox city, the main road named Rabbi Akiva.
Right.
Try to think about the youth movement, the large youth movement in Israel called Bnei Akiva. And what's the kesher, the connection between Rabbi Akiva Road in Bnei Brak and the youth movement? Okay, everyone has his own Rabbi Akiva. And it's the center, you know, it's fair.
It's so true. It's so true. With us, Rabbi Dr. Binyamin Lau. The book is called The Sages. It's part of it's the third in English that is available to everybody. The Sages, Character, Context, and Creativity. You can read about these giants from the perspective of Rabbi Lau. I want to remind everybody that, in Teaneck, New Jersey, in honor of the launch of our Buy the Book segment, Judaica House in Teaneck is offering a Nachum Segal special discount on all of Rabbi Lau's books, a special price of $18.99, which includes The Sages, Volumes 1, 2, and 3, includes the brand new book regarding Jeremiah that we discussed earlier in this hour. So we certainly recommend go to our friends at Judaica House in Teaneck, New Jersey, take advantage of the special, and check out more of Rabbi Lau's publications in hand. In terms of all of the Maggid studies in Tanakh, and, of course, all of the Koren Publishers books, you can go to the website, korenpub.com, korenpub.com, and you'll be able to secure all of their great works. There's just a wealth of information available to you, courtesy of Koren Publishers, and we hope everybody takes advantage. Finally, Rabbi Lau, I guess this week is an appropriate one to discuss this. Any week is an appropriate one to discuss this, but with the passing of Harav Avad Yosef, even more so, because we worry about transitions in the Jewish nation. We worry about transitions. We worry about what will be a few years from now, a few months from now, even a few days from now, what is coming on the horizon. And you have been outspoken about some of the things that the Jewish community, especially in Israel, has to be very wary of, has to be concerned about. What are some of the things that you would love to see change in our society that you think need an immediate fix?
I should say that if something frightens me is the sectors that we have in Israel. This is one of the illness that we have, that it happens so that we build walls between sectors. Every sector feels that the state, the country, the society is his own, and the terrible fighting and negative eyes between sectors in Israel, between the Dati and the secular, between the you know, Ashkenazis, so many sectors. And if we need to be careful about something very specific, is to understand that our duty is to destroy these walls, and to understand that if we want to feel that Hashem lives in Eretz Israel, in our state, He will not come if we will make the walls between us. This is the most danger situation that I feel in Israel today.
Your father's background, which you alluded to earlier, is one that's well known to our audience. We have been fascinated, both through his book and just through his life in general, fascinated by the incredible life he has led in the Holy Land, and as you described earlier, how he on his own went to the Holy Land. And in fact, you mentioned that you yourself would certainly, you don't think it's appropriate to judge others in general, but certainly because you were one who was born in Israel, you would feel it unfair to judge somebody who's still living in Chutz La'aretz. This might overstate the obvious, but I think it's important to say, does growing up in a home like yours and coming from parents of those types of background, does it in fact lend a lot more to openness, to tolerance, to patience for one's fellow Jew and other movements within the Jewish people?
You know, many reasons why you grow, you know, psychologists can help me, but when you grow up with the deep memory of the Holocaust and you learn bit history from the Bible, from the sages' days, when you learn the large picture of the Jewish people, you understand that all the arguments between sectors will bring us to a very, very dangerous situation. And if we want to build ourselves strongly in our place, we have no ability, we have no rights. It's a chance. And I know it moves me all the time to listen carefully to the voices of the prophets and to the words of the sages and to my parents' voice, to the whole over history. Be careful. It's the situation that we have now. It's like a present. We are in a very strong positive situation. I see the numbers in Yerushalayim. Thanks God, we are in really blessed by Hashem in the present time. But we should be very, very careful.
Rabbi Lau, an absolute honor to speak with you, especially for this length of time. Thank you so much for joining me in Mazal Tov on these brand new publications.
Thank you.
Rabbi Dr. Binyamin Lau from Israel, what an honor to have him on. You are listening to Buy the Book, which is an amazing presentation of our friends at Koren Publishers. Remember that in honor of the new launch of Buy the Book, Judaica House in Teaneck, New Jersey, is offering Nachum Segal listeners a special discount on all Binyamin Lau books. The special price of $18.99 includes The Sages, Volumes 1, 2, and 3, and the brand new book, Jeremiah, The Fate of a Prophet. We are strongly recommending them. And, of course, if you want any information about Koren Books and this incredible Magid Studies and Tanakh series, you can go to their website, korenpub.com. Again, that is korenpub.com. Magid Books is a division of Koren Publishers, Jerusalem. The Nachum Segal Network continues to offer amazing programming. Our music mix is next. Enjoy it here on this Tuesday. And don't forget to join me next week, 10 a.m. on Tuesday, for another look at some of the most amazing publications out there from our friends at Koren Publishers. I want to thank everybody for listening to Buy the Book and urge you to continue listening to the Nachum Segal Network at NachumSegal.com and JMintheAM.org. Mm-hmm.